Okay, we have been talking about, in just kind of broad general stuff, we've been focusing on our CERT training, okay, which Robert, for you, just to understand, are you familiar with the CERT program at all, C-E-R-T? It's Community Emergency Response Team is what it stands for, and it's basically the idea of communities that train individuals to be able to be, in a sense, kind of first responders, people that are on the scene to be able to respond to some kind of an emergency, community-wide emergency, like a tornado comes through or a hurricane or whatever, until the real first responders get there. And so it's recognizing that there are emergencies that are taking place, and we need people that can do some basic things to help out and so forth. And what we've done is we've taken that idea and said we have our own CERT program, but ours stands for Christian Emergency Response Team, and that has to do with recognizing and acknowledging that there are people who are lost, and they're dying, okay? Spiritually, they're dying, and so we need to be able to respond to that emergency. And so everything that we've been doing over the last, this whole year, has been focused on training, basically, and how do we help people to see Jesus, and how do we help them to, how do we teach them what the Bible says, and how do we bring people to Christ so that we can save their soul? So that's really what our Bible classes on Sunday morning are focused on. So we've been, over the last several weeks, been talking about and looking at the topic of denominationalism. The question that comes in, this will work better if I turn it on, won't it? The question comes in, why are there so many churches? All of these different churches, the people that claim to be Christians, we're all supposed to be following the same Bible. How do we end up with so many different churches? It becomes very confusing to people. And that's a question that I get asked a lot by folks when I sit down to begin studying the Bible with them. How do I know which church is the right church? And so forth, since there are so many different flavors or varieties or choices, if you will, out there, how do we know where to go and what is the right thing? A lot of confusion that is being put out there and so forth. So we're trying to clear up a lot of that. We talked about the fact that by 2011, there are 41,000 different groups that claim to be associated with Christianity. Okay, so we're talking about a lot of folks, a lot of groups, a lot of confusion. The question then becomes, well, where do they all come from? Okay, and then how do we figure out the right place to be and so forth? All right, we left off in looking at this particular chart and talking about the Protestant Reformation. And you remember I was telling you last time about kind of where all this comes from, that basically historically, if you go back and you look at Christianity from a historical standpoint, secular historical standpoint, all right, what you will find is that secular history recognizes Catholicism as Christianity. All right, and you can actually go back and look, and history will tell you that even the Pope that the Catholic Church has today is a successor of the very first Pope, who was Peter, because that's what they claim. But secular history basically follows the growth and so forth and development of Roman Catholicism, and so thus this chart basically that line that's going, it says early Christian church, that by the time of around 1054, you have a break, okay, or division in what was at that time known as the Roman Catholic Church, that developed into the Western Church and the Eastern Orthodox Church. The Protestant Reformation comes along a little bit later, and what we see happening there is that, and I mentioned to you last time, we have Martin Luther, who was a Roman Catholic priest, who basically he saw a lot of things that the Roman Catholic Church was doing that were wrong, that were not in the Bible and so forth. Martin Luther's goal and his attempt was to reform the Roman Catholic Church. Okay? It was never, as I understand historically, it was never his attempt to start his own church. Okay? Later on, after Martin Luther's death and so forth, there were those that took up the mantle and they developed and, you know, the Lutheran Church. Okay? But that was never his intended goal. He wanted to reform the Catholic Church to get it back to where it should be. Part of the problem, though, with Martin Luther is he didn't want to go far enough, okay? There were a lot of things that he saw that were wrong, and he wanted to fix those, but there were a lot of things that were wrong that, you know, he didn't have much problem with and so forth. But at least that's where that attempt was, to reform that. So from that Protestant Reformation, which is basically the idea, let's reform the church. Okay, they were protesting what was being taught and what was being practiced in the Catholic Church, in what was at that time known as Christianity. Okay, they were protesting that, and that's where then we see these breakoffs of all these different groups that came over time. These different groups developed because what basically was happening is you have this group that breaks off, and then, you know, as people are, and we'll see why in just a little bit here, you know, they're kind of going along, and they've got their beliefs and their doctrines, and somebody says, well, I don't like that. I don't agree with that. Okay, so then what are they going to do? We'll go and start our own church where we can believe what we want to believe, you see? And that's basically where a lot of us come from. Now, if you recall, last week we ended in talking about, you know, kind of where did all this start? How did it develop? Because somebody was asking about, you know, okay, let's go all the way back to the beginning here. We have early Christianity. How did we get to that point of the Roman Catholic Church being, you know, Christianity or recognized as Christianity? And I was trying to just kind of describe for you basically this, what I refer to as the evolution of leadership, that help you to understand how do we get away from what the Bible was teaching and to that point where the Roman Catholic Church was recognized as Christianity. So recall that I was talking about, and each one of these circles on here represent an individual congregation of the Lord's church in the first century, okay? As the gospel was spread, you read in Acts, they went, they preached the gospel everywhere. People were being converted, churches were being planted, and people were believing in Jesus as he was being taught by the apostles and the disciples in the first century, okay? So over a little bit of time, what began to happen is you had these pockets of churches in a region. So each one of these groups would be a region, okay, where there are some different congregations, kind of much like it is here, where we have this congregation here in Dinwiddie. We've got a congregation over in Petersburg. We have a congregation in Hopewell, actually two in Hopewell, you see. So basically, what was happening is you had all these different groups, okay, that eventually, you know, they decided, well, let's take one person from the church and let them kind of represent us because, you know, we want to know what's going on with them and, you know, and be in touch with them and fellowship and all of those kind of things, which is a good idea, right? Nothing wrong with doing that. You know, we do that now. We want to know what's going on with each other. We send bulletins to each other, announcements and all that to let folks know what's going on. And so being in touch with one another and knowing what's happening with other churches, nothing wrong with that. The problem is that what happened over actually a very short time is that this group of churches, these small groups in these areas, after a while kind of became where now they're all, in the terms of the Catholic Church, uses a parish, okay? And they're all under one body, so they're no longer autonomous. As the Bible teaches, we're told that Paul told Timothy to do what? Appoint elders in every church, right? Not a group of elders to oversee a bunch of churches, but in every church. So we had church autonomy is the way that God's word describes church leadership. Well, along the line, what happened is the folks said, well, hey, you know, we can just kind of get together and get all these churches kind of together. And we got kind of a person or a group of people that's over all of these congregations. See, instead of group over one congregation, we have a group that is over all the congregations in that particular area. And that idea appears to have spread throughout all over the place. Now, so what happens is you have all these different pockets of these different churches, okay? The ones that are in the circles. And they're churches from all over the region, all over the world, okay? And then, so each one now has its own group of leaders that's over each pod, if you will, or parish of churches. Everybody following me here? Am I confusing anybody? Okay. But eventually what happens is you take that idea and you expand it to the next level, and that's where you have that group in the center, and you say, each of the different groups say, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could know what's going on, you know, with the folks and be in touch with them way over, you know, on that part of the world and so on and so forth. So they decided to expand the idea a little bit more, and each group then sends one representative from their group, okay, to this collective body of leaders that now becomes this group that is over all of those churches. Okay, so it's not even just a local thing anymore. Now it is a regional and worldwide thing. And this is basically in a summary of how that leadership model developed. Okay, where you start out with something that seems a good idea, it's very innocent, and a little bit at a time, it grows into something that isn't anywhere close to what the Bible actually teaches. Now, the other thing that was happening, you call it, hold on just a second here, that was happening is while this was going on, okay, the church, what was recognized as Christianity as it was developing, it was growing in power. Okay? Even though there was a lot of persecution going on, it was developing in power such that I can't remember the date. I think it was around 413, something like that. When Constantine was the emperor of Rome, he became a Christian. And there are those historians who would tell us that the primary reason that Constantine became a Christian was because he didn't want to lose his power. Okay, it wasn't as much that he believed in Jesus and wanted to save his soul as that he wanted to save the Roman Empire and his position as emperor. The church at that time had become that strong and powerful in its influence in the world, okay, that the Roman emperor was concerned about keeping his position. All right? So we see that, you know, okay, by 4-something, I think it was 413 or somewhere around in there, you know, just a few hundred years is all it took to get to that point where we have a structure that is recognized as Christianity / Roman Catholicism, and the leadership structure of the Roman Catholic Church was formed and developed after the model of the Roman Empire, where you have the emperor at the top and you have senators underneath and proconsuls and so on and so forth in this pyramid kind of a structure of government. And if you look at the Roman Catholic Church, that's the kind of government that they have. The Pope at the top, at the pinnacle, and then the cardinals and the bishops and the priests and so forth in this pyramid kind of a structure. And so that's where this, again, if you follow historically, secular history, that's what it will show you as you look at Christianity, the history of Christianity. And that's where it, where we come to that point as we're looking at that other chart there, where you have early Christianity, which again by that time was recognized as Roman Catholicism. Okay? Now, Amy, you had a question?
You answered it just there to the Pope.
Okay.
Just the center.
Yes. Yeah. Dale?
I think they even had a biblical basis for this in the Council of Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. About in Acts 15, yep. Where there were some questions that needed to be resolved.
Right.
I think the difference was then they still had apostles,
right,
to go and talk to, you know, that were, that had a little bit of a special dispensation, I guess,
yeah,
that can, to make these kind of decisions. Whereas later on with this, they all they had was human wisdom.
Right. So. Yeah, and it wasn't long after the end of the first century where this strain began to really take off. You can read things in the early church fathers, we're talking about in the second century, that are indicating that they're already moving in this direction. So that's how, in a sense, the mechanical way that those things got started. Now, I've got this chart, and I know y'all can read it from way back there in the back, right? But basically, and this is one, and I've got some hard copies of this I can give to people. I gave these out a long time ago, so most of you probably already have them. If you don't have one, you want one, let me know and I'll give you one. But basically, this is shows, it's similar to the other chart that we were just looking at, with really one thing that's really different. If you look up at the top, this corner, left, okay? Where it says the Bible up there, can y'all see that? Okay. And if you come down from the Bible there is the development that we were just talking about of Roman Catholicism and the history of Christianity as it followed that whole thing. And then you have all these branches that come off of the churches and so on and so forth. But if you go in that path that goes right away from the Bible, that basically... My belief, okay, and based on what Jesus says in Matthew about that he is going to build his church and the gates of hell will not prevail over it. Y'all remember that passage, right, in Matthew, okay? That the church, the Lord's church, has always existed from the time that it was established. There have always been those people who have been following the teachings that were handed down from the apostles in the first century. Okay, and thus, until the Bible was produced in written form, that they've been following that. Otherwise, if that didn't occur, then what Jesus said is, wasn't true, that the gates of hell did prevail over it, okay, until the restoration movement came around. I don't believe that. I believe in the restoration movement, but I think that there have always been Christians, people who have been following, trying to live by the Bible. The problem is that most of history has been following this other path, while those who have been there have been quietly living their life for Christ the way that the New Testament teaches to do. Okay? Does that make sense? Everybody understand what I'm saying here? Okay? So the church has always existed. What happens is that if you come down to about the middle of that thing where it comes down around the top and comes down, we have what is referred to as the Restoration Movement. Okay? How many of you are familiar with the Restoration Movement? Okay, a few of you. The Restoration Movement basically was where you have a lot of these preachers that were denominational preachers. They're in denominational churches. And all around kind of the same time in history, in the late 1700s, early 1800s, and through that particular time period, a little bit longer, you had folks that were starting to look and to go, wait a minute here. We're not following what the Bible teaches. Okay? There were issues that came up, like baptism and other things that started causing some of these folks to start questioning and looking and going back to the Bible and saying, what does it teach here? Okay? And so basically, we can have a whole class on the restoration movement, but we'll have to do that another time. But basically, what happened in a nutshell, you had, again, people that were in various parts of Europe and America at that time that were doing that, okay? They didn't even know of each other early on. But this movement, as it started spreading, was basically to say, look, we need to get back to the Bible. And we need to stand on the Bible. And we need to, as one of the creeds of that particular movement was, we need to speak where the Bible speaks and be silent where the Bible is silent. And so there was this determined effort to restore what was at that time recognized as Christianity back to the first century church. Okay? So denouncing all of the doctrines and the creeds and all of the teachings that were going on in denominationalism, saying, let's just get back to the Bible. Okay? Now, our heritage in the churches of Christ comes from that restoration movement. Okay? That basically says, yeah, we're a part of that. Okay? We're folks saying, hey, let's denounce all this other stuff and let's just focus on what does the Bible teach. Okay? So again, what we have is this restoration or this re-energizing of the church back to what the New Testament taught, okay, concerning the Lord's church and what it was. And so in that restoration movement that came out of denominationalism, we have those who are simply trying to be Christians and Christians only. There's no Baptist Christian, Methodist Christian, Catholic Christian, doesn't exist. We're just Christians. We're trying to follow the New Testament pattern of Christianity. Okay? So hopefully this will give you an idea of the answers that question, from a standpoint of, physically and so forth. How did we get to where we are with some 41,000 different groups of people claiming to be Christians, so many flavors and so forth? Well, that's how it all happened. And these are things, and again, if you don't have one of these charts, see me afterwards and I'll give you a copy of it you can have to be able to sit down with someone who asked that question. Where do they all come from? You can share this with them and help them to be able to see this is kind of how it all happened. Now, let's, for the remainder of our time, let's take a look at what are some things that the Bible says about this. Okay? We know where it came from a standpoint of physically and secularly, but what about what the Bible has to say about this happening? All right? So we start out looking at what are the causes of denominationalism. Well, Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy 4, he said, the Spirit clearly says that in latter times some will abandon the faith and follow deceiving spirits and things taught by demons. Such teachings come through hypocritical liars whose consciences have been seared as with a hot iron. So Paul, in the first century, predicted that denominationalism would come. Okay? That there would be those who would abandon the faith and follow deceiving spirits. He warned. Okay, first century Christians, that was going to happen. All right? We have a problem where, why do people abandon the truth, you see? Well, sometimes it's because men desire to honor men. Okay? 1 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning in verse 11. Paul addressed that very problem that existed at that time in the Corinthian church. Okay? There was disunity in the Corinthian church over several different issues. Okay? But at least one of them had to do with them making allegiance to different men. Okay, as he says here, I have been informed concerning you, my brethren, by Chloe's people, that there are quarrels among you. Now I mean this, that each one of you is saying, I am of Paul, and I am of Apollos, and I am of Cephas, and I am of Christ. Has Christ been divided? Paul was not crucified for you, was he? Or were you baptized in the name of Paul? So, in other words, what was taking place here? People are putting their allegiance to perhaps the one who taught them and brought them to Christ, or what have you, the one that was influencing them the most, and they're saying, well, I'm a follower of Paul, or I'm a follower of Peter, or you know, what have you. And his point here is, no, who are we supposed to be following? Christ and him alone, okay? But this was causing division already in the first century in the church, where people are putting their allegiance to individual people rather than to Christ himself. So Paul wrote to correct that particular problem and attitude. Okay, but we see, again, by the time Paul was dealing with the Corinthian church, this whole issue of unity was already a problem. Okay? Another problem that exists is that men's desire to substitute what God says. Okay? And this problem goes way, way back, okay? Before Christ came and established the church and so forth, in the Old Testament times, we certainly saw many examples of the Israelite people themselves wanting to follow other people's ideas rather than what God had instructed them to do. But here's one particular idea, or example rather, where we have a Gentile, okay, commander of the army of Abraham. And notice the attitude here. And my point in bringing this out is just, this is the nature of people, okay? This is how people are. Notice what takes place here. He tells us here, Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper. Okay? Now, the story goes on to tell us that there was a servant girl who was an Israelite who gave a message to her master that says, hey, you know, there's a prophet over there in Israel that can heal you. And so Naaman, you know, goes to the king and he says, hey, you know, give me permission to go over there and see this guy and maybe he can do something about my leprosy and so forth. I'm just paraphrasing for you, okay, the story. So we pick up then where he goes to meet the prophet. Okay, and basically the dialogue, he goes and the prophet sends out a messenger, okay? Elijah sent a messenger out to him with this message. Go and wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan River, then your skin will be restored and you will be healed of your leprosy. Okay, so basically what happened is the king of Syria sends him to the king of Israel. And the king of Israel panics because it's like, wait a minute, they're trying to pick a fight with me, basically. And he says, I can't do anything about it. He sends him to the prophet. All right? And so Naaman goes to the prophet's house, and this is the message. This is what he gets. All right? The prophet doesn't come out. He sends a messenger out to tell him to go dip in the Jordan River 7 times. All right? But Naaman became angry and went away, saying, I thought that for me, he would surely come out and stand and call on the name of his Lord, the Lord is God, and would wave his hand over the spot and cure the leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? And he turned and went away in a rage. What's the problem here? Or maybe there's several problems here. What do you see here happening?
It wasn't what he wanted.
Okay, first of all, hey, Wait a minute. I thought for me, I think I have some of these things. Yeah, I thought, first of all. Okay, yeah. I thought. Whoops. I thought for me, certainly he would come out himself. What does he do? He sends out a messenger. I'm more important than that. And surely he would come out and wave his arms and do some great miraculous thing and I'd be healed, right? And by the way, aren't the rivers of Damascus a whole lot better than these dirty old waters here in Israel? So you see, he thought. You know, yeah, exactly right. He thought. And that's one of the reasons that people kind of go into all kinds of other beliefs, because they come up with thoughts of their own rather than just simply obeying what God tells them to do. They, yeah, because they think their ways certainly would be better. Ray, did you have a comment?
No, I was saying that God is not just saying according to what we think. He does it according to what he wants to do.
Right. Exactly.
We have to obey what he says.
Right.
You know, many of the ones who look what we ask him and why. Mm-hmm. But God has a plan for him to know it for.
Right.
Because what?
Yeah. Oh, he, you know, eventually after his servant came and said, hey, wait a minute here, think about this, you know. But the idea here is that oftentimes that's where a lot of this gets started. Somebody has a better idea. You know, I thought about this or about that. Yes. Even to the Gentiles, yeah. Anne, you had your hand up a moment ago.
Yeah, I understand. He was a leper. Usually lepers, even when they went into a village, they had to yell under their
right. Well, yeah, my understanding is that there are different forms of leprosy, some that were more severe than others and so forth. And so apparently, and this is what scholars would say, obviously I wasn't there, but I don't think I was. Anyway, you know, that he probably, he had leprosy, but it was probably some minor irritating form of leprosy, but it wasn't debilitating, you know, like a lot of it, you know, and so forth.
Where it was, wave his hand over the spot.
Yeah, and so that's likely what it was.
Leprosy is a general term referring
for
to
a lot of, yeah.
A lot of
And some of it is very contagious, still is. We still have lepers in the world. Some of it is, it's very contagious, and others not quite as much, depending on what form of it is.
And also, since he wasn't a Jew, he wasn't bound by the requirements of the law
right.
of Moses that specified what you do whenever you
right.
have lepers.
Okay, so, you know, again, just the idea of, you know, people wanting to substitute their thoughts and their ideas for God's word, okay? Back over to 1 Corinthians. Paul says, now these things, brethren, I have figuratively applied to myself and Apollos for your sake, so that in us you may learn not to exceed what is written. Okay? So that no one of you will become arrogant in behalf of the one against the other. Again, they had this problem in the first century church, in the church in Corinth. Unity and division and all those things were an issue for them. They're already kind of, you know, have this problem of wanting to do different things than what they had learned and what they'd been taught. And so he warns them, do not exceed what is written. We had that problem going on. Okay? Another problem. Where does all this come from? We get a warning from the scriptures where people are hearing without searching. And that's a huge problem today. people are just accepting whatever they're being preached to about, you know, whatever the preacher's saying, it must be true, because it's kind of like people believe today, they can't say it on TV if it's not true, right?
Yeah, right. Be on the internet if it wasn't true.
Yeah, that's right. You know, well, there's a lot of people, unfortunately, who think that if the preacher says it, it must be true, because he's not going to tell us something that's not right. Okay? So people are believing and accepting whatever they're being told without searching to see if what they're being told is true. And we have Paul here commending the Bereans because they were searching what was being taught to them. Okay, in chapter 17, verse 11 of Acts, the Bereans, he says, were of more noble character than the Thessalonians, for they received the message with great eagerness and examined the scriptures every day to see if what Paul said was true. Okay, so what are they doing? They're hearing the message, and they're doing what I keep telling you all to do all the time. Search it. Okay? Don't take my word for it. Make sure that what you're being told is true. Not true according to what you want to hear or what I tell you, but true according to the scriptures. Notice he says they searched where? They searched the scriptures. Okay? And that's, and when people don't do that, then anybody can come along and tell them anything. And they're going to believe it. You don't know the scriptures, then it's really easy for you to be led astray. Men oftentimes, this is another reason, men are oftentimes willing to substitute something else as authority.
Well.
Okay? Something else other than the scriptures. In Galatians, Paul writes, and keep in mind again, these are warnings that are being given to the first century church. These problems were already happening. So all those things I was telling you about, the development of Roman Catholicism, you know, you think this is happening in the first century, okay? By 400 A.D., it's not a big stretch to see how it had gotten so far out of the line in those many years. Because they were already turning to different gospels, as he said here. I'm astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you by the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel, which is really no gospel at all. Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach a gospel other than the one we preach to you, let him be eternally condemned. There are those who are throwing them into confusion. Okay, and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. Right? Right?
It has not changed. I mean, it's gotten...
Nope. Still going on. Still going on. Okay? A different gospel. How many gospels are there? Just one. Okay, you start presenting a different one, we ought to be able to recognize that. How are we going to do that? By being like the Bereans. Okay? By being like the Bereans. Okay? 2 Timothy 4 and verse 3. This is a passage we've looked at different times before. The time will come, Paul said, when men will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, why? To suit their own desires. They will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. All right? So, again, I don't like that message. I want a different message. All right? So, let me go find somebody that's going to tell me what I want to hear. And there's no shortage of that today. Again, how many different groups are there today? 41,000. Okay? It's not hard to find someone who will tell you what you want to hear instead of what you need to hear. All right? But Paul gave that warning. And then in the second letter that he wrote to the church in Corinth, he says, "For if one come," he's upset with them because they're kind of accepting, you know, what things that are people are coming along and teaching them, and they're accepting it too easily. He says, "If one comes and preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted," he said, "you hear this beautifully." Or some of your translators say, "you accept it readily." Okay, so again, this is the first century church. They've got this problem where people are coming along and teaching them things that are different from what the apostles taught, and they're accepting it. Okay? Because they are not discerning the truth in those things. 41,000, and as Ray said, in counting, groups who call themselves Christians. Okay, again, keep in mind, the things I'm sharing with you are things that I'm hoping that you'll be able to sit down with someone who asks about denominationalism. What can you do to help them to see where all this stuff comes from, historically and biblically? Okay? But finally, what we need people to understand is, what's Jesus' take on 41,000 different churches or groups who call themselves Christians? In his prayer, John chapter 17, before he was arrested, tried, and crucified, Jesus prayed for unity in his church. Okay? "Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word." Who is that referring to? Us-ins, we-ins, you and me-ins, that's right, okay? "That they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I am in thee, that they also may be one in us." Why? "That the world may believe that thou hast sent me." You see, part of the problem with denominationalism is the world doesn't know what to believe, because we're being told so many different things. All right? And certainly, many people have a difficulty with believing that Jesus was sent here by the Father. Okay? So hopefully, we're out of time, but hopefully these things that I've shared with you about denominationalism, you'll be able to sit down with someone and lead them through in answer to those questions. Where do all these churches come from, and how do I know which one is right? Okay, you can share with them a little bit of the historical nature of where all these churches come from, but also to point out the scriptures that told us ahead of time these things were going to happen. Okay, and encourage them to be Bereans, right? To search the scriptures. And as I do when I sit down with somebody, I tell them, and we open the Bible and we read what it says, and I tell them, I don't want you taking my word for it. I want you to see for yourself what it says in the Bible. Okay? Now, just to let you know kind of where we're going from here, Dale is going to start next week in looking at, which kind of is, you know, this part here at the very end where he says that the world will know that you sent me. He's going to be focusing a study on answering questions about who Jesus is and so forth. Dale, you want to any more in-depth about that real quickly? Or
we're going to talk about, and keep in mind this is focused on you sharing the gospel. I understand that all of you believe that the Jesus written about in the Bible is true. But how do you convince somebody else that you're talking to that didn't grow up in the church, and to them the Bible is a bunch of fairy tales? I want you to have some evidence that can show that the biographies about Jesus are accurate, that the word that you have in your Bible is essentially the same as what was written in the first century, essentially that the Bible is a trustworthy document, that you can place your faith in and trust. trust to be able to change your entire life based on what it says. That's a pretty high threshold to meet. Oh, I'm going to read a book that's going to change my whole life. The Bible is one that can and should do that. And so we're going to talk about how you can convince other people that that's true.
All right. Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you.